Welcome to a special edition of MLB Extras. Let's listen in as D-backs manager Torey Lovello addresses the media from the winter meetings in Las Vegas.
Yeah, it was different than anything I'd ever been associated with in this game. And, inside of my baseball life, it was probably one of the hardest days that I've ever had. I knew that it was a possibility. I got the phone call that morning that it was going to happen. Mike wanted to tell him face to face, which I thought was a pretty honorable thing. Sometimes in those situations, you'll tell somebody over the phone or somebody else may deliver a message. But he said, I want to tell him face to face. So we were trying to figure out the best spot. So, sat him down. Mike informed him that the trade had been made, and Paul took it in stride, as good as you think. As good as he possibly could have. I know that your mind starts racing at that point. And he was, in typical Paul form, that he was already pushing forward and thinking about the future rather than dwelling on some of the things that did or didn't happen the way that they were supposed to. It was a sad moment for me. I didn't talk a lot because I probably couldn't. And I had a little bit of a conversation with him once Mike left that I'd like to keep private, but it meant a lot to me, and I got a little bit more color to the picture. One of the things that I did share is that he felt like there was so much unfinished business in Arizona, and he felt bad about that. So I had to reassure him that he left everything he had on the field. The culture that he helped us and me create will be carried on, and one day when we do win a world championship, he's going to be a part of that, even though he won't be there. He won't be there physically. The great impact of the loss? Yeah, I think, you fight to get over those things. You have a once-in-a-generation type of player right in front of you for a lot of reasons. Physically, fundamentally, he's off the charts, but he's just such a special human being. So when that steps out of your environment, it's a hard thing to get used to. But we know that it's post Paul right now, and we've got to start pressing on for 2019, which is what we're doing right now. And the last things we talked about were wishing each other luck, and he's gonna win a World Series. There's not a doubt in my mind, because he's very forward thinking, and that's what he wants to do. And it's unfortunately won't happen in a Diamondback uniform, and hopefully won't happen in my baseball lifetime. Hopefully we win him before he does.
As a manager, when you have a player like him, the GM is considering trading him, and obviously the GM has to consider a longer term picture.
Yeah.
I mean, you obviously know Mike really well.
Yeah.
Please don't let Mike go.
Right. I'm probably a little bit more emotionally attached to Paul in this decision as I am with every player. So when something like that is taking place, it's hard for me to see it the way Mike does, but that's his job. He's flying 30,000 feet above it, and he knows what the overall perspective is. And I trust him. I trust him. I trust where this organization is going, and it's his vision. I believe in that. So when he is informing me about some of the thoughts that he's having, I support him. I will give him my thoughts, and I know that he takes them and uses them to make his decision, but he's going to make the final decision on the personnel, and that's how it should be. But yes, I had spoken to Mike about reconsidering several times, but as I was getting informed through the process, I know why Mike did that, and I trust the reason why he did that.
When you guys talked, did you sense any sort of, he had a sense of inevitability that something was going
to happen? Yeah, I felt like he had that vision. He knew what he needed to get done for the good of this organization moving forward to sustain winning. So, Paul, I'm sorry. Can you rephrase the question then? Because I was thinking totally Mike.
Yes.
Without going into a lot of detail, yes, I felt like at a certain point he felt like something was going to happen. Yes.
With AJ Pollock, in your
history, yeah.
How did you approach that from a short-term, immediate-term perspective of maybe periodic extra days off?
Yeah.
The bigger picture, season planning, how much you can count on him.
Yeah.
Over
Yeah, AJ's a very dynamic player, and for the first month and a half of the season before he got injured, right, was it mid-May? He was the best player in the National League. I saw that hands down every single night. So I knew that there was a history of injuries, and several times they were not his fault. The injury that occurred this past year was him trying to make a play, and he broke his wrist. That's just part of his personality. So I felt like it was my responsibility, as it is for every athlete, that I have to protect them. I believe in the medical team's research that they're doing behind the scenes to give players the rest they need and then go full throttle at some point during the year. So with AJ, I was doing my best, as I would with any player, to make sure that they were on the field for the most important time of the year. It just didn't work out this past year because it was a normal injury with him diving for a baseball. But like I said, AJ is a very dynamic player. He's a very special player. He can do a lot of things on both sides of the ball. And when he was gone, we missed him drastically. Yeah.
Why year over year did he have such a strikeout spike in particular?
Yeah. Well, I feel like, first of all, Patrick deserves so much of the credit for believing in himself after a tough 16. I think he was sent to the bullpen. In 17, he started to develop a lot of confidence in a couple different pitches that he was landing at any time. And that's all that hard work that he's putting in behind the scenes to make good things happen. He believed in scouting reports. He believed in pitching plans that we put in place. And he was starting to have a lot of success that he carried over into 2018. When I first met Patrick, he had a lot on his mind. He was frustrated by a lot of things and maybe being a little bit misunderstood. I encouraged him to be himself and trust those around him. And he did that. He had a couple pitching coaches and a really good catching core that he developed a strong relationship with. And you can see it yielded very, very good results. So Washington's getting a very special player. We're going to miss him in Arizona. We knew that was a strong possibility that it was going to happen. And I know he's ready to anchor a very, very good pitching staff. Nothing against Max Scherzer, but I think they got two very, very complete pitchers right now.
Did he buy into analytics further? Did you have to kind of get him to go in that direction? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, I think at the beginning when we were bringing some new normals into the organization, the start of the 17, and more specifically in spring training of 17, he was kind of resisting it, and he was going to rely on some of the things that he was good at that worked prior to that point in his career. But the more he trusted and began to develop relationships with very important people inside of that pitching room, he started to see some really good results. So I know that, like I said, he delivered the pitches. He made all good things happen by him going on the mound and dialing it up. But he went out there with a lot of confidence and had a great plan that he followed. It took some time for him to develop that relationship, and it became very powerful. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think what it means is you're trying to put the best people in the best positions, no matter what their backgrounds are. If they're going to have the ability to teach and get in front of people, whether they play the game or not, it's not going to matter. So I think it's a special place where baseball is heading, and it doesn't matter. I mean, if you could have landed on Mars and lived there for 25 years, if you're going to help us score runs or prevent us from scoring runs, we're gonna consider hiring you if you're gonna fit the position that we need. So, I might be kind of like a transitional guy. I've played a long time ago where there was more of the cowboy mentality, and I've transitioned into today's game. And I know that if you get as much information as possible to make the best decision moving forward, or give yourself the best teaching tool possible to relate to a player, it's gonna give you a distinct advantage.
Is this something that could have happened?
Turned a corner with the players that I could be more responsive to some of the documentation. Well, I think everything has an evolution process. I don't know who the pioneers were. I know Bill James obviously was somebody that was at the forefront of it, and he gets a lot of credit. But I'm sure there was a lot of people way back in the day that were doing things behind the scenes that nobody knew about. But today you're seeing it play out and work and pay dividends quickly. So I feel like it could have happened at any time, but now it's right there in front of us, and it's very public. But it's been happening in baseball in different ways and different circles at different times. Yeah.
In terms of getting coaches.
Yeah.
How do you think things are going to be different just in terms of instruction and how guys are being worked with and what they're being coached on?
Yeah. Yeah, we're looking at two things in that area. We're looking at run production and run prevention. So we're going to try and build a team, the best team we can on each side of that. And you know, last year was a little bit of a learning experience for me because we had, you know, a team of three hitting coaches. In 17, we had a team of four pitching coaches that were instructing and moving forward. So. I feel like we're going to try to build the best unit possible to deliver the best messages the best way we know how to enhance both sides of that equation. I'm always looking for the best teachers possible, which means to me the ones, you know, the things that are important to me, the ones that can communicate, the ones that can listen, the ones that know how to articulate and get points across at the right time, the right way. And I think we have a really good team of guys right now. Darnell Coles, we're really excited about. Eric Hinsky has also jumped on board as the assistant hitting coach. Those were two very careful hires. We spent a lot of time with those guys, and I know that I've said it. I connected immediately with Darnell, and he had a great way of getting his point across to me, and he sounded like he had a great process that we're watching play out right now. So we're looking forward to a very healthy 2019 spring. I'm sorry. Well, they're both going to step right in and have immediate impacts at the big league level. You know, what level, we're not sure, and that's what we're looking for. And it's up to them to come out and perform and be ready, and I think they will. I know they're super excited to be here, be in this organization with the opportunity that they're getting on the opportunity that we're talking about. You know, specifically with Weaver, there's a lot of upside. I know it wasn't a tremendous year for him. You know, everybody says the change of scenery will do him some good. He probably would have had a great year if he had been in St. Louis as well. There's a lot of horsepower. There's, you know, two extra pitches that he can throw and control. We're really super excited about his ability to come in and be a part of the staff. With Carson, I know a lot of people publicly felt like he was blocked by Yachty. It'll be a way for him to kind of get out from underneath one of the best catchers of all time and do his own thing his own way. And that's what I encourage both guys to do, or, well, specifically Carson, to do, is to go out and let his personality express itself and be himself as quickly as possible. So we're super excited to have those guys, as well as the others that we've acquired. But I think specifically those two guys are going to find themselves in a big mix this year for us.
Do you see a possibility of any pressure on them to perform because of where they came from?
Where they came from?
And, you know, as a manager, how do you address that?
I've already talked to both players about that very particular point. They didn't know who they're traded for. It's obvious. I mean, one of the best players in the National League, and they got to block that out and just be themselves as quickly as they possibly can and not try to validate anything. When you try to validate things in this game, or when you get into the have to's in this game, you're gonna back up. So I just told them to be themselves as quickly as possible, become a part of the special family that we have in Arizona, and let their talents play out the way they know how. We've targeted these guys. We know a lot about these guys. We've asked a lot of questions about these guys. We know what they're about. We know who they are. We know what they're capable of doing, and they don't need to be anything better than what they already are.
So, a lot of the Japanese players,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people are talking about the time this year,
Yeah. Yeah. You know, unfortunately, we didn't see Ohtani a lot. He was in the other league, but I know he had a tremendous year. And you're right, we feel like Yoshi was a very special performer for us this year. He was a very important part of the back end of our bullpen that carried us and got us to where we were towards the end of the season. Offensively, we had a very challenged year, and we put a lot of pressure on those guys, and they responded extremely well. In particular with Yoshi, it's hard to come over from another culture and integrate yourself to be a good teammate, but he had a tremendous personality, fit right into this group of guys, and I know that was important to him. And then his talents on the field played out as well. He went out and with an aggressive fastball mentality and a great secondary pitch and trusted the process that we're talking about with our analytics team and made big pitches and got big outs all year long. And we wouldn't have been as good as we were without Yoshi. Mike Bell? I'm a huge fan of Mike Bell's. Actually, I'm a huge fan of anybody with the last name Bell. I mean, how can you not be? But I know he's had a lot of history in this game. He's learned by some very important people in this game. And he's got a great baseball mind that could work in any situation in any environment. And wherever he lands, if he becomes a big league manager sooner than later, I think he's going to be a tremendous asset to any organization.
You mentioned kind of the pressure talking to Carson Kelly.
Yeah. 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 Without a doubt, he's going to check every box and ace the exam. I'm a huge Paul Goldschmidt fan, not because of his ability to hit a ball out of the ballpark at any time in any situation. It's his ability to be accountable. It's his ability to step up in any environment and slow things down and follow the process that he believes in that he knows is going to be successful. He's not going to get too high or too low. He's gonna be the professional that he is every single day and has been up to this point in his career. That's gonna be a great example of those around him, and he's gonna uplift that entire organization. He's gonna make every player around him better.
Have you seen that in like when you guys rise?
I have. I've seen him have some big moments. But that same big moment he's practiced for on the backfields, and I've seen him do it the same way there that he does in the game. And the best part about it is I've seen the same result. He'll hit a home run in batting practice. It'll look the exact same as him hitting a home run in the wild card game. Nothing changes his demeanor, and that's pretty special. I learned a few things this past year, that I was probably a little late to the party every once in a while with making some changes. I believe in the player's ability to perform, and I would let things linger maybe a little bit longer than they should have. I'll key in on that. I feel like that's something that I learned from 17 to 18 that's going to help me be a better manager. But I'm just myself every single day. I try to make good baseball decisions based on the information that I'm getting in front of me, based on the instincts that I believe in, baseball instincts that I believe in, and then gathering information with the staff around me to make the best decisions possible. There's no secret formula to what managers do. That's what I do every single day. But there's a couple subtle adjustments. One that I mentioned that I'll probably pay attention to this upcoming year. Yeah. I know that he has a very thorough process that he believes in. He has a tremendous vision of what he wants his staff members to do to teach the players. And we feel like once our players get into player development, they're in very good hands about what it's going to take to be an Arizona Diamondback. He doesn't come off of that. He's an extremely hardworking, organized leader that communicates extremely well. And I feel like the baseball part of it will speak for itself. I know he hasn't been in the dugout as a manager, but that's something you can learn rather quickly. It's those other things, those other intangibles that you bring to the table that make you special. He's got a great personality. He's got a special way to deliver messages and a special way to communicate with guys.
With relievers generally, mm-hmm. and their year-to-year volatility,
mm-hmm.
why do you think that happens, and what challenge does that present? trying to build a bullpen?
Well, I think the teams go with the hot hand, and if you feel good that day and you can verbalize that, you're ready to go. That can be dangerous. We try to limit guys working more than 3 days in a row. After 2 days, we start to pay attention to it. We pay attention to warm-up pitches, routines. We calculate everything to eliminate the idea of pitchers wearing down short-term, which would be in August and September, with the important months of the season, and then long-term, that they are going to last more than 3 or 4 years. We believe in treating players the best way we know how to let them perform at a maximum capacity for as long as possible. So I just know that in the older generations of baseball, you would take a couple of Advil and say, I'm good, and you could never, ever talk about not wanting the baseball. I ask players to be honest with me from day one of me getting the job. So my relationships with them lead me to get their best answer on a certain day. And when they're gray, they're gray. If they can't go, they can't go. So, and I make the decision from there.
So would that boil down to overuse, you think?
I think, yeah, I definitely overuse is what's going to shorten the life expectancy of a relief pitcher. Not a doubt in my mind, yeah. Yeah. A couple, I did. I had a couple conversations about potential lineup change, not lineup changes, position changes. And my vision is perfectly clear. I'm not going to mix it up. I want to go out and win and expect to win every single night. And I think the players feel the same way. So, yeah, that's something that I rehearsed and have been saying publicly, that I want to make sure these guys know that there's a special group that's still left there. There's a lot of offensive capability. There's a lot of proven production inside of this lineup already. Not that we're going to replace Paul, but we have some horsepower. We have some people that are ready to step up, and they need to step up. They've played meaningful games. They've had meaningful at-bats and meaningful situations, and they're ready to step up and take it to the next level. You know, I don't know all those answers, to be honest. There's a lot of talk and speculation, and I see the same thing that everybody else does of, you know, what's happening here at the winter meetings. But I can tell you that our group is upstairs right now trying to do the best things they possibly can to make our team better for 2019. And whether that's additions or subtractions, I can't tell you. To be honest with you, Mike does loop me in a lot of key situations. And in the Paul Goldschmidt example, instead of giving it to me where it was probably up and down, he would give me the facts of what was happening with a phone call maybe that morning at around 7:30 or 8 o'clock, like, heads up, this is what will happen today, and that's what's probably going to be happening. So I haven't gotten any of those phone calls right now. I'm seeing him a lot. I haven't gotten any of those conversations out of him, so I don't know what's going to happen. The back end of the bullpen? Yeah, I do, personally. I think if you were going to come up here and arm wrestle me and force me to give you a decision, I'm going to probably start with Archie Bradley as the extreme back end of that equation. But still, we got to have those conversations. I haven't had them with Archie, but I know he's capable of doing it. He's got that presence. He's got that personality that wants to step into that situation. So I don't know. I don't know where it's going to take me right now, but those are conversations that Mike and I will have. But to answer your question, that's where I'd start right now on this day today.
I think when you're
interviewing, you know, both sides are asking questions, and I want to know what Mike's vision was, and it was aligned with mine. He wants to win. I think that as we started to develop a little bit of a relationship with our roster and understand where we were headed, that this could have been a possibility where we lost Paul. But like I said, I don't think we're in a rebuild or a reload. I think we still have some very capable players that are going to help us win some baseball games. Where that lands us, I'm not sure. But yes, Mike and I have a very open dialogue. We have a very special relationship that allows us to have those conversations, and it's not uncommon for us to talk about these types of things. But in the interview process, it was clear that we felt like we could win, and we did win. But where it takes us from this point forward, we're not sure.
You said you asked him to reconsider. Can you elaborate that?
Paul? Yeah, I just was probably playing devil's advocate. At times I would step into being a friend, and then at times being a colleague, and I was attached to Paul, and it was like, you know, hey, this is a once in a generation player. Are you sure this is something that needs to be done? And he would walk me through the steps and educate me and teach me as to why this had to happen for this organization. So as I got more educated, I started to see his point of view. A little bit of what I know about him is what Yoshi had talked to me about in some of my conversations during the course of the year, just very small talk with Yoshi. According to Yoshi, there's a lot of very talented players that are ready to come over here to America. So who they are, where they land, and what happens, we'll keep an eye on that for sure. Expectation? Well, much of the same. We love what Yoshi did, and without him this past year, we wouldn't have been as successful as we were, and I want that to continue. You know, I'm going to sit down with Yoshi when he returns to America. I think it'll be shortly after the new year to make sure that he's doing okay physically and fundamentally, and not have him do any more, but to embrace what he did last year and pick it up right where he left off last year. So the expectations will be exactly the same. I don't know. You know, I just mentioned that I would probably, if you had a gun to my head, I would probably look at Archie as a closer. But, Yoshi is going to be in the conversation as well. He had a tremendous year. So I don't know. I probably got a little ahead of myself. But we have some very capable back-end guys. And who lands in that closer spot, we've yet to determine. But we'll have those conversations.